In terms of practice for today, we'll be looking at mindfulness or practicing with mindfulness of thoughts. And I think this might be helpful, especially now when you might be experiencing a lot of thoughts that maybe you haven't in a while, maybe that are sort of new and not so comfortable because of the current situation that we're all in with COVID. But thoughts that you're familiar with and would like to become unfamiliar with, possibly. And this is so we're going to be doing a little bit of meditation practice on how to work with this in a meditation practice, and then hopefully glide it in fairly smoothly to the sutta and discussion about the replacing or relaxation of thoughts. So I'm going to mute you if you're not muted yet, or again. And let's start with our practice. So settle into a posture, seated, standing, or lying down that is comfortable for you. And let's turn our attention first towards the landscape of the body. Just noticing it tonality-wise, or as if we were looking at it from a little bit afar. Just sensing how the body is in general, not to conceptually take it apart, but just to notice, pay homage to the fact that you have this body now. And make a mental note about how it is. Scanning or feeling, noticing, sensing the body. And then turn a gentle and kind eye towards your emotional landscape or the territory of the heart. Again, just to pay homage to having one. A good one at that, and a heart that has feeling. And as if you were gazing at it or observing it or sitting next to your heart, just noticing the way your landscape looks or feels in general. Not to tease anything apart conceptually or analytically, but just to notice and know and be with. And then turn your kind attention towards the landscape of your mind. Or the mental realm or mental landscape. Again, sensing its tonality, or gazing at it as if you could from a little bit of distance or from afar, not to take yourself out of it necessarily, but to have a little bit of perspective or view. is paying homage to having consciousness, mind, awareness right now. And noticing what it's like for you. And then turning a kind eye, kind heart, a kind mind towards your breath, wherever you can sense it. Or to a place, a neutral place in your body, if you like, if that's a little bit more comfortable for you. But turning the attention with some gentle effort towards breath or breathing, towards a neutral area of your body, hands, feet, sometimes are those kinds of places, entrance of the nostrils. Wherever you can sense something that you can rest into. Easily, or fairly easily. And as if you're gathering your kind attention, just be with the sensations, the feeling, the felt sense of breath, or a particular neutral place in your body, or even pleasant area of your body if you can find one. And draw your attention down and in. Down and in. Down into the body. Down from the thinking mind. Down to the earth, the ground of your being. Every once in a while, you'll most likely notice that your attention will lift up or lift out away from breath or away from the body. And very kindly as you can be towards yourself and habit of mind, habit of having a thinking mind, draw your attention and your awareness, your consciousness back down and in, somewhere in the body or back to the breath. And if you can, do this as if you're welcoming yourself back home, or back to the earth even. ground of the body, the earth of our being. As you may notice, the thinking mind doesn't easily rest. It takes a little bit of gentle effort to turn attention towards the body or towards the breath, like you're steering a ship or guiding yourself or someone, a good friend, back to the path that they've wandered or you've wandered away from. So there's a bit of repetition involved. Just know that. When you remember to come back to the body or the breath, remember it as kindly and gently as you can. You might also make note of where you just were. And sometimes we notice that the mind, the thinking mind, has wandered off out of the body and away from the breath and into a whole other planet, completely fabricated by the thinking mind. Maybe it's somewhere in the past that we're rehashing. Maybe it's to a place in the future that hasn't yet happened that we're imagining. This is really normal. But when you notice the thinking mind and the grip that it sometimes has, the pull or the magnetic force that it sometimes has, lift us up and out of the body, lift us up and away from the breath. See if you can, as you're bringing yourself back, notice where you've been and just say, no, thank you, not right now. To not pushing away, not being angry or frustrated, but just, hi. No thanks, not right now. And allow your awareness to drop down and into the body again. In these last minutes of our practice together, I'd like to read you a little piece called Autobiography in 5 Short Chapters. Just to rest your heart mind on reflecting. It goes, Chapter 1. I walk down the street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I am lost. I am helpless. It isn't my fault. It takes forever to find a way out. Chapter 2. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it. I fall in again. I can't believe I'm in the same place, but it isn't my fault. It still takes a long time to get out. Chapter 3. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it's there. I still fall in. It's a habit. My eyes are open. I know where I am. It is my fault. I get out immediately. Chapter 4. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. Chapter 5. I walk down another street. This is by Portia Nelson. So just rest your mind for a moment. Down and in on the breath. Or somewhere in the body. Just for another moment. And then slowly take a deeper breath or two in and out. Breathing in and out through the nose. And when you're ready, allow your eyes to open again. Please feel free to stretch. This sutta is obviously it's translated by many different, very skillful people. And so I want to read from it a little bit as it's been translated by Tanisara Bhikkhu. Who translates it as the relaxation of thoughts. The other translation that you might find is by Soma Tara, who's also a monk, and he calls it the removal of distracting thoughts. So you can see just in those two different translations, it's different but similar. So it's either the removal of distracting thoughts or the relaxation of thoughts. And I offer those titles or just, you know, the title of the sutta or the translation of it for you just so that you can see there's a little range around always how we hold this and begin to understand it. So before I dive into the reading you from the sutta, I'd like to just tell you why we practiced the way that we did. So when we're trying to gather the mind or focus the mind on something, we find that that's a very slippery slope. Maybe doesn't last more than a few seconds, maybe possibly a minute if things are going in a more calm and easy way in that particular time. Either way, it's neither good nor bad, but we begin to notice that our thinking mind just really pulls us in what I like to think of and how I imagine it or picture it myself as up and out of the body. And on long meditation retreats, I would sort of see myself, my thinking mind, my habit of lifting up and out of the body like a balloon. And I would imagistically pull the string of the balloon and bring it back down and in. So that's what I would do for myself over and over and over again. Come back down and into the body, noticing either an area that was pleasant or neutral even, or coming back to my breath, but something that is in the realm of felt sense or somatic or soma of the body. And sometimes I would also notice that when my thinking mind would grab me, take a hold of me, and almost have this magnetic pull, so I'd be somewhere again riding outside of my body, I could feel my physical body actually lean forward. And so I was sitting on a cushion, but I would start to lean forward. And so then when I sensed that, I was almost as if I were leaving my body physically as well. I would imagine that I would take my arms, I would cross them over my chest and come back down and in, as if my arms were wings and they were really stretched out and I was doing a little bit of a back bend, in between my shoulder blades. And I would take my wings and I'd fold them over my chest and I'd come back down and in. So I wasn't taking flight, but I was landing and coming back down and in. So I offer those images to you in case they're helpful. The saying of no thank you, not right now, came from one of my Tibetan teachers, Sokhni Rinpoche. And he gave this great story, gave a description of the thinking mind as a bully. And quite an illustrative description of how the bully can work, which I'll share with you in a moment. But it wasn't until, probably at least a decade later that I really, like anything that we reflect on over and over again, our understanding of it changes, and hopefully the dimensions of our understanding grow. And so I understood what Sonia Rinpoche was pointing towards, immediately. And as I repeat the story and as I practice with it myself, I understand it in many more dimensions. And then also reading this sutta helped me understand what he was saying a little bit more even. So his story is, the illustration that he would give us about the thinking mind, or what he was saying was the discursive thinking mind, or the critical thinking mind, also discursive, is that it was set like a bully. And so we would set ourselves up on our cushions for meditation. Some of you heard me say this story before. And we'd get all set and have our, really nice pashmina shawl and the perfect incense and the air conditioner set just the right way. We'd have all these conditions that we could take care of absolutely as we wanted them. And then of course, it was either too hot or too cold, or the incense was too sweet or too stinky, and the shawl was scratchy or something like that. So we'd have to keep shifting around, which I think we all can relate to when we sit to meditate. or lie down to meditate even, is we set up the conditions as best as we can, and then there's always something that needs to get changed. Yeah, I don't really like this. Oh, if it were only like that, etc. So he would describe the discursive thinking mind like a bully, and he would say, you know, you've got yourself all set up, and then you finally, your mind is settling. And you hear boom, 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 this very, very loud knock downstairs at your door. And of course, this very loud knock, you know who that is. It's the bully. And you're like, oh no, another disruption. You know, just when my mind had settled, everything was in its perfect place, perfect order, the bully comes. And so you feel yourself sort of contract or resist, the body gets kind of tight, and you know, you're like, oh no, I don't want to let that bully in. You know, the bully is going to take me up and out of my body. That's my language. The bully is going to send me into some sort of, you know, bad frame of mind or discursive thinking. Also my language. And so you try to resist it, but you're hearing this boom, boom, boom on the door. And he said, so Yurimshe would say, well, don't resist. Go to the door. Open the door. You hear the bully. It is clearly the bully. Open the door and say, hi, how are you? No, thanks, not right now. And very gently close the door and go back. So this was, you know, it was really funny, and he went into a lot more detail than this, but I'm sharing this with you because oftentimes when we're noticing our thoughts, you know, they do take us out and away, and sometimes we're away for a minute or two, or sometimes even 10 or 20, you know, it depends. When we notice our thoughts, or the thinking mind has, you know, pulled us out, oftentimes the way that we return is with some judgment, some criticism. Some form of resistance. But generally, it's not very nice the way we try to bring ourselves back down and into the body, or back to the, you know, anchor of awareness that we've chosen for that particular session. And that's not helpful. It's not helpful at all. So when we judge and criticize ourselves, typically what will happen is that we will feel ashamed, we'll feel guilty, we'll feel embarrassed, we think we failed, and we won't want to come back because it's like, oh, this isn't for me. We'll give up. Either that, or we won't give up, but we'll keep beating ourselves over the head. Or like Portia Nelson was saying, we'll fall into the hole again. We see it, same gosh darn street, same gosh darn hole, and we keep falling into it, and then we berate ourselves over it. As she's very skillfully wrote, we can avoid the hole by going around it. That's one option. We could take another street. That's another option. So Sonia Rinpoche's story of the bully and opening the door is an option. We greet the bully. We greet that line of thinking, or the judgment, or the critic that's been banging at the door telling us, you were no good. We can't practice. We're not going to ever be able to meditate. Our mind's way too busy. Nobody else's mind has these thoughts like I do. Oh my God, they're all looking so calm and peaceful right now. I'm the only one that doesn't get this, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Rather than go on like that and basically set a whole tone of habit, or a whole new habit in, or strengthen that pattern of thinking, reinstate it, strengthen it, deepen it. We open the door, we say, hi, how are you? That's to ourselves. No, thank you, not right now. That's also to ourselves, because the line of thinking is in our mind. Now, we might have learned that line of thinking from someone else. It could have been our parents of choice or origin. It could have been what we learned in school. It could be from our culture. It could be in our genes. It's endless. But I think the important thing to remember is that when we push away or resist, it's not helpful. It's like falling into the same hole and then berating yourself that you did it again. So the choice of walking around it can be saying, hi, how are you? No, thank you, not right now. And eventually, or it could even be a form of walking on another street, eventually we do take another street. Because we know pretty much where that street is going to lead and the hole that it's going to take us down. So this is where the relaxation of thoughts can come in, or what's sometimes called the coarse peg. So in this sutta, the Buddha says, just as a skilled carpenter or his apprentice would use a small peg to knock out, drive out, and pull out a large one, in the same way, if evil, unskillful thoughts imbued with desire, aversion, or delusion arise in a monk while he, she is referring to and attending to a particular theme, that would be our anchor, he should attend to another theme apart from that one, connected with what is skillful. And so essentially what the Buddha is suggesting that we do is remove pain-producing thought, an unskillful or harmful thought, or even feeling, with one that is more skillful, helpful, not harmful, even beautiful. And this is the punching out the coarse peg, or using one peg to knock out another and replacing it with a finer one. And this refines the mind. It refines our awareness. It fine-tunes sort of the whole landscape of choice. All of this depends on repetition. So oftentimes we will, like Portia Nelson was saying, we'll walk down that same street. It's a habit, as she said. It's a habit. So we can even take the self-blame out. Habits aren't always caused by us directly or conditioned by us knowingly, and yet we all have them. And if you take the I out of the situation, I caused this, I'm to blame, then it's as if you're saying, hi, no thank you, not right now. Does that make sense? So this is the repetition part, though, is what I really want to impress on you for now, because nothing happens without a little bit of skillful effort. Things don't magically disappear. And this is why we're training the mind. This is why we're practicing mindfulness. One of the reasons, anyway. And kindness, self-compassion. Because in order to train the mind, in order to be able to stay present with something for more than a fleeting second or two, we need to bring it back to an anchor, back to something that we choose to support concentration, to support mindfulness. And we do that over and over and over again. And sometimes it means that we've had to have hit ourselves on the same wall over and over and over again to see, oh, I see what I do. I see that street. I see that pattern. I see that habit. I see that conditioning. I see how it hurts. I felt it before. And when we make the choice not to do it again, I mean, that'll take some time. It's not going to magically disappear, as I just said. But when we make the choice to come back gently, kindly, again and again and again, that's replacing the coarse peg with the finer one. Eventually, it'll be in there. Pretty much, well, most of the time. You know, again, we're not enlightened yet. I'm not enlightened yet. So, I mean, sure, I've read about enlightenment, but I'm not going to speak from my experience. I mean, I think even enlightenment, as I say often, is can come in many small moments, you know. And then, so we have a taste of that for sure. But the Buddha goes on in the in this sutta, and he says, he's suggesting that, or telling us to deliberately and directly ignore these thoughts, turn away, give no attention, or giving no attention as if we're shutting our eyes or quickly looking away from a disturbing and harmful sight. Interesting, huh? And if such patterns continue, he suggests, the wildly unskillful thought, or the wildly unskillful thought stream should be gradually slowed and stilled by slowing the breath, step by step, as if gradually slowing one's pace from a run to a walk to standing. So that's yet again, end of quote, that's yet again another skillful way to say, no, thank you, not right now, to go around the whole or even down a whole nother street. And we've been practicing some breathing, different kinds of breathing techniques with imagination or with the count or some sort of form of skillful means of breathing practice to do this similar thing of slowing the breath down. Because when we slow the breath down, we slow the mind down. When we slow the mind down, we can drop down and into the body or back to the breath. So this is a variety of, these are a variety of different skillful means to work with the patterns or the conditioning of mind that we have. And hopefully to treat the conditioning of mind, the patterns, the habits that we have with some semblance of kindness. I always think that the good news is that the Buddha taught these things because it means that, oh, if he was teaching these skills, these skillful means, ways to work with the mind, the path towards liberation to others, it means that there were many others that needed to hear the same thing. Aha, it's not just me. So, you know, that might be helpful for you as, all, as well. But the I think that the essence of any of these skillful means that we might choose to come back down and in, whether it's slowing the breath, walking around the hall, taking another street eventually, saying no thank you, not right now, is to know that all of these things require remembering to do it. Repetition, over and over and over again. So all the neurobiologists, neuroscientists know now what the Buddhist and the Buddha has known for thousands of years is that pathways are plastic. Neural pathways are plastic. In other words, they can change. The mind is plastic. It can change. And we know from practice that we can change our minds, we can change our hearts, and we can, to a large degree or to some extent, change our bodies. Sky is the limit as far as I'm concerned. Sky is the limit. But in order to change anything, it's not going to happen instantaneously. It takes time. I don't remember how many lifetimes the Buddha had to go through before he was enlightened, but quite a few. So don't expect things of yourself that one shouldn't expect of any human being. Check those expectations and say no thank you. Not right now. Or don't take that street anymore, the street of expectation or the street of beating myself up. Go on another street. But just do it over and over and over again. Over and over and over again. And this, to end this talk, is to also remind you of why we really need and can value community. Whether it's a spiritual friend group of each other, or group of each other, the Sangha or the community of like minds and hearts of practitioners is really, really pivotal and important, has great value. Because given or left to our own devices, we easily forget. We easily self-blame. We easily judge ourselves. We easily think we're the only ones. Isolation is devastating to the thinking mind. And I think also can be ruinous to the heart. And so in any way that we can, whether it's a teacher, a mentor, a spiritual friend, a group of people like we're in now, however it is that we're meeting and connecting, it's really important and has tremendous value because we remind each other. And we also remind each other because we can become skillfully honest with each other. I see that you're taking that street. Remember the hole? Oh, yes, you could say. Thank you for reminding me. I forgot. So it's that community, that friendship, that's spiritual friendship, as it's called, that's super, super important. So I'm going to end that here as far as having you muted and having me be the only voice in the room. And I'm going to open it up to all of you for any kind of questions or comments that you might have. So again, because we can see each other, there's not a lot of us in the virtual room. If you want to ask or offer something, please just raise your hand and then we can defer to each other nicely. And if there's a lot of sound around you and you want to mute yourself, then go ahead and just do that on your own. Oh, Carol, we can see you now. Yeah, Cynthia.
So being in my body is not my strong point. And and it seems like, I mean, I don't know that there are any nanoseconds when my mind is totally absent. And sometimes for periods, you know, sometimes it's talking to me. And sometimes the volume is turned way down so that I can barely hear it or I can't discern what it's, you know, what the thoughts are actually saying. But there's this kind of noise there. I mean, there's this feeling there. So I don't know if this is a comment or a question, but I get caught then trying to figure out, you know, is where I should be.
May I ask you a question about what you said?
Sure.
How do you, how would you define absent? You said when you're there are very few times when your mind, if any, that are absent.
Quiet's a better word.
Okay.
Like really quiet.
And the question then is, or is, you're not quite sure if it's question or comment.
Yeah, it's probably probably more of a comment. I don't quite know what the question is.
Okay. Do you?
Is that, how weird is that? I guess that's the question.
Okay, raise your hand if you have no idea what she's talking about. Nobody's raising their hand.
Okay.
It's not at all. I mean, and that also points to the value of community. Because if we don't know that this is normal to have a thinking mind and one that is pretty loud or continuous, then we think, oh gosh, this isn't for me. And I wonder how everybody else is doing this. You know, how I wish I could be in somebody else's head and just feel that peace, that blissful peace. Well, the blissful peace can come, but usually it takes a lot of practice.
Right.
And it might be like a nanosecond, like you said. And we can easily forget those nanoseconds. I want to just say that out loud, because we have that negativity bias that doesn't let us remember any of the goodness, but definitely will continually remind us for the rest of our lifetimes the things that aren't pleasant or negative. So this is why I also said that things aren't going to just magically disappear. It takes some skillful effort, but kind effort. So I would say that the remembering aspect will come with time, of being reminding yourself to come back into the body. And then I also want to say that oftentimes for many of us, the body is not the pleasant place to be, or is it even that settling? And that's okay. I mean, that's not okay that your body is like that, but you can also choose other anchors. So it may not be breath. That might be a little slippery for you because, again, it's located in the body. Sometimes, you know, depending on our mind or our past, breath may not be comfortable to focus on. Even could be a physical condition like asthma, and breath isn't that pleasant to, or even easy to focus on or land on. So in that case, you can take choose another anchor. That could be sound. It could be, and I don't teach this, but it could be a mantra. It could be sight. It could be taste. It could be, well, actually a mantra, I just did teach you that somewhat, because your mantra could be, no, thank you, not right now. Right. So that is essentially a mantra, but you're not saying, no, thank you, not right now, repeatedly, just for the sake of it, but you're applying it as needed. So it would be a little different than a mantra of repetition, but, or, you know, continual or contiguous repetition, but just apply as needed. Does that make sense? Is that helpful?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is, you know, also why it's helpful to have someone get to know your practice, because as we are over time in this group, I can get to know your practice. Certainly if we were working one-on-one, I would have a lot more insight in it. But as we get to know each other's practice, then you can say, well, you can give different suggestions of what might be helpful. Because it's, you know, as we read in books, or as you might hear on an app, it's just the breath. Well, that's not true. Breath is a beginning point for a lot of us, and it's something that certainly was taught by the Buddha, but it's not the only. I mean, he didn't only teach that either as a skillful means or as a form of concentration. There's lots of forms of concentration. But just know you're not alone in that, and at some point I'm happy to give you other suggestions that might be helpful if the landing in the body or the breath is not right for you right now.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And thanks for the transparency, because I think, you know, this is helpful to know that we're not totally not alone. So Donna had to leave for another meeting. Anyone else like to share something? Either about the practice or the poem or the writing or the sutta. Yeah, Karen.
Yeah, well, you read, which I've also heard it called the parable of the whole, is one of my favorite things.
Oh, yeah.
I people I work with in a program, and we talk a lot about like character defaults, like the things we do.
Yes. Habit,
you know, yep. Whatever it is that used to work. You know, I was little, being like perfect was really good. I got a lot of, you know, attention for that, but right. Then it gets out of control. And so whenever I find it, you know, that saying like ignorance is bliss, sort of, I mean, there's a part of me that was in really automatic mode for a long time until everything sort of like I couldn't do it anymore. I had to really break apart what it was that I was doing that was creating sort of the lack of ease. So now I'm aware, like I know what the whole is, like I know all my whole, you know. And what I like about that, you know, the parable or whatever, the poem, is that I can see what I'm doing, and I can see, oh, like, okay, in this one today, I'm at this paragraph, you know, or like, oh, today I actually totally took a different street. Like I can catch myself, like I'm about to do or say something and I don't do it. And that's like, I'm at that, like I walk down the other street. I mean, that right. same issue the next day, I might fall in the hole. You know, it's sort of like, it helps me construct, now that I'm aware of the things that I'm doing that are problematic for me and my life and other people. Mm-hmm. And I know I have choices, and I have a certain, you know, I'm responsible. I'm not blaming everybody or going into like self-pity holes. That poem helps me sort of like see where I am. Mm-hmm. And it's not linear. You know, it's not linear.
No.
So I wish it were. But I have a meme to share. I don't know. Can you see this? Oh, sorry. Let me see if I can get the light. I don't know. Hold on. It's
no.
really here. No.
Do you want to read it?
Yeah, it's, let's see. Hold on. It's this little girl, and she's got she has this face with like a light coming out. It says, when you've experienced a soul lesson for the 1500th time and it finally clicks. I ain't gonna do that again. You know, she's like, no. So, you know, I like that parable. There's another story.
That's good.
About a woman in a cave beating herself with a stick. I don't know if you know that one. I'll send it to you, but it's
yeah.
It's a story, but it has a point. So I'll send that to you. But yeah.
Great. Yeah. And there was a bumper sticker I saw a long time ago. I took a picture of it, but who knows where that is. I think it said, oh no, not another life lesson.
Yeah.
Something like that. And it was like, yep. Yeah, that's
but
great.
But whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. I'm strong enough now, that one.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Exactly.
So anyway, I appreciate your reading that. I like that a lot.
Thanks, yeah. Shy of mind tonight. How is the practice? Does that make sense about noticing thoughts or thinking and not even taking it personally, but just bringing yourself back to something with some kindness? Any thoughts around thinking? Do you have any thoughts about your feelings? Yeah, Mary. There you go.
Yes. Well, I have a question. It might be a sort of a trivial question. Sorry. But when we try to go back to our body, mm-hmm. I find that it happens in different ways. And I don't know any of these ways are preferred, but you know, one way is to sense a certain part of your body. What is the sensation that you have, let's say in your feet or your legs or something like that. Mm-hmm. Another way that it happens for me that is helpful for sort of getting away from the thoughts is hearing things in the environment or mm-hmm. even the air, sensing the movement of the air or something like that. Mm-hmm. Is all of that a part of the same path?
Yes.
It is. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so when you are listening, you could, that's called mindfulness of sound. Mm. Right? And that's coming in through the sense door of the ears, hearing. Actually, it's not just the ears. We feel resonance in the body, but it's in the body. Of the body, in the body. And then the feeling of temperature or air, yeah? Breeze, mm-hmm. temperature. Again, that's sensation. So that's body as well. Mm-hmm. Right? So that could be, that's using mindfulness of sensation, mindfulness yeah. of body mm-hmm. as your anchor, or it's called anchor, support, or even home base. Mm-hmm. You know, a little bit of different language around it.
Yeah.
Right? And when you do that, when you come back to the feeling of air or a sound, how does that make sense for you in terms of the sutta or even the autobiography in 5 chapters?
Well, okay. For one thing, it does alleviate the thinking. It mm-hmm. it stops the thinking, which is a huge relief sometimes.
Right.
And the concerning the hole that one could fall into, you know, I have certain thoughts that are stories that I've been clinging on to and so forth that I feel are the hole that I've been falling into over and over again.
Right.
And so it is very good to be relieved of them. Yeah.
Yes, isn't it? Mm. And hopefully you don't feel alone in that, right? Because if you want another show of no hands coming up, who hasn't felt that, right?
It's hard in this time of COVID, you know, to not have actual yeah. interactions in the same room and so on.
Yes, it is.
But it's good that we have this group.
Yeah. Thank you. And I agree. And I think the you know, because of where we are in the world, of the world right now, pandemic world right now, things that were just sort of uncomfortable might become more uncomfortable now. Our habits might be a little more poignant or profound. You know, sort of tolerance maybe a little less. Yeah, it's just a distressful time.
I think it actually, to me, it actually works both ways.
Mm-hmm.
There are some things that are very annoying and can be aggravating. But at the same time, the fact that we're forced into this simplicity, we're not allowed to go out, we mm-hmm. have to stay at home, we tend to, you know, we have the opportunity to simplify things to a point where we can, you know, actually relax.
And, yeah, if we can, yeah.
And so there's some good things too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course, it depends on if we can stay home, but
yes, yes.
And who we're home with.
Yes, yes, indeed.
You know.
Yes.
I'm sure some people are not at home exactly with who they want to be with.
Yeah.
Or alone and don't want to be alone. But yeah, I think it, within every painful lesson, hard time, difficult time, throughout the history of human beings, out of any tragedy comes a lot of goodness as well. Now, we may not be able to see that individually as of yet. Some people are going to maybe say that's baloney right now because it's just so hard and so painful.
Right.
And I could respect that if anybody said that right now. But yeah, part of what we're training ourselves to do is to make the choices of how to think or feel or hold whatever the current causes and conditions are. This is why one of the reasons why the Tibetans in particular have been so good at training their minds and see things that are uncomfortable as real fodder for practice. You know, it's like, yeah, bring it on almost. I mean, not that anybody has to bring it on. There's going to be discomfort and suffering, whether we try to make it happen or not. But, you know, it's the, okay, well, this is the way it is. How do I work with it? I mean, there's some great stories of individuals who were Tibetan individuals, monks in particular that I've heard of, or lamas, Rinpoches that were imprisoned by the Chinese and used it as a time of practice. I've even read, not the whole book, but there's a book about a gentleman that was on death row that used it in solitary confinement and used that time to strengthen his heart and open his heart. You know, wasn't going to let the imprisonment of his body or the guards or the conditions there sour him, which is just incredible, you know, really inspiring. But, you know, some of depending on who's listening to this right now, it might be, are you kidding? No. And I can totally respect that. Or not yet, or maybe never, I don't know, you know. But at some point that is our choice, how we're working with anything, especially the most unpleasant. Yeah, Paula.
So you were saying that you visualize it as a balloon, your thoughts, mm-hmm. and that you'd pull the balloon back. And I thought, so what and maybe I won't know this until I experience it, but if you're not thinking about the present or the past, which is consumes me much of the time, right? Where is my mind going to be? I mean, as I progress, because I'm new at this, everybody, what is your mind doing then? It's hard for me to
Oh, that's a great question.
Conceptualize, you know, yeah.
That's a really good question. Does anybody want to say something about that from your own experience? What's going on with the mind?
Right.
When it's not in the future or the past.
Yeah, where is it?
Where is it? Anybody want to add?
The present.
I know, I thought of that. I thought, okay, well, it's in the present.
Right. And what's that like?
I know, that's what I thought. Because I almost thought, that's a really dumb question because, you know, it's in the present, but it's hard to visualize.
It's hard to visualize. It might be brief, and you just treated your mind like the bully.
Like the bully.
Yes. You said it might be a stupid question.
Oh. Right. Okay.
It's a great question. I think this is a brilliant question. And I want to ask everybody again, would anybody like to try to describe? Yeah, Jen.
Yeah.
Where is the mind? What does it feel like?
I could try I think my internet connection is unstable. Okay. But I think when I think about that, I think that it's like I'm feeling the sensations that I'm trying to notice, I guess. Mm-hmm. And one way that helps me to know that I'm not in the thinking mind is sometimes I ask myself the question, like, what will my next thought be? And it helps me realize that I'm not in a thought.
Excellent.
And so I guess when I'm not in a thought, I'm fully feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's great. Really good. Anyone else want to? Amanda?
Yeah, I guess I'd be kind of echoing what Jen said. It's like the volume just starts to turn down. Mm-hmm. It's like, or at times it feels like it's paused. And it's hard to, it's kind of like a catch 22 because you just, it's like you don't notice it because there's something else your attention is resting in. Mm-hmm. And it does, I think it comes back to what Jen said, it's feeling, it's what Mary spoke about, the sensation of the temperature of the air on the body, mm-hmm. what the breath feels like, whether it's the tickle at the nostril or like the my rib cage expanding and contracting. It's just like it's all consumed with what's really the present moment experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be hard to describe.
I find the most simplest questions are.
That's why it's brilliant.
Yeah.
It's funny. I think it's funny. I thought it was a stupid question, and you're saying it's brilliant. I was like, I'm kind of embarrassed.
This is the mirror or the echo chamber that you can be in when you're with someone else, you know, a spiritual friend or community.
Right.
It's like, oh, right. I didn't even notice that. Claudia, did you want to add something?
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, it's just like, I don't know, it's sometimes when I'm just out in nature or I'm just so present, like I can feel it in all my different sensations, like, or even when, like, sometimes I reflected, like, when I'm the most happiest, I actually am when I'm most present, like sometimes listening to music or dancing. For me, being out in nature or surfing, it's just like I can just feel my whole body. I can hear the sounds and I can feel just that warmth in my body. But that's when it's pleasant. And then sometimes, you know, it's also from those moments of being able to kind of be present with that, I can become present with everything else that's going on. But sometimes when I'm just aware that it's unpleasant, I'll just smile as well.
Fantastic. That's really good. Carol, yeah, please. Oop, you know what? We're not getting you. First of all, you're still muted. Hang on a minute. I don't know that your connection's going to be strong enough.
You hang on a second.
There we go.
Mm-hmm. I was just saying, this is the first time I've done it on an iPhone. I went into safe driving mode, even though I was walking, and I couldn't see anything. But anyway, so, and I missed a little bit at the end. Oh. But in terms of one's mind, mm-hmm. In addition to being really focused on whatever one is sensing, as everyone has said, my mind feels quieter. It feels more relaxed. Mm-hmm. And that's all I wanted to say.
Yeah. And are you aware? Are you aware of those moments?
I think so.
Yeah. Sounds like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why we meditate.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the reasons, because you know, when you're more calm or at ease or peaceful or just aware of what is, then you make sense of what is in a way that's deep, much deeper than the thinking mind. It's called recognition, yes, or knowing. There's a, we want to make sure that we are aware of those peaceful moments. And that's, again, that, you know, it's the skillful turning towards and really noting or knowing or recognizing. Eventually, you don't have to put effort into it. You just do it. But I would say for a while, we certainly have to put effort into recognizing that. Mm-hmm. Well, one of my teachers used to say that the thinking mind is like a mala, a mala bead, a mala, you know, bracelet or necklace, is that the thoughts were the beads, and the little silk knots or string knots in between the beads, so they're not rubbing, are like the gaps between the thoughts, and that those gaps are what we want to pay attention to. Mm. So it's like Jen was saying, it was like noticing that that there's a space between going into a thought, or how did you say that? It was a lot more eloquent. I'm not thinking now, or I'm, what was it that you said, Jen? Sorry.
No, you're describing it. I'll ask myself, what's my next thought going to be?
Right, that's it. Yeah.
And then I'm really quiet, and then I realize that I'm not in a thought
for
an amount of time.
Exactly.
Which I didn't make up. I read that in a book.
Yeah, and that it is an example that's sometimes used. It's like, okay, think as many thoughts as you can right now. And then you're like, can't come up with any. So how do you describe that state? That sort of, it's actually a bardo. It's in between. It's an in-between state. It's not been born, and it's not passed away yet. It's in between. Interesting state. So these gaps between thoughts, this, however you describe it, as bliss or ease or peace or rest or knowing, calm, abiding, you know, I mean, there's lots of different words that we can wrap around it. But know those when you have them. Just really let that sink in for a moment. Now, well, usually it's afterwards, because the moment that you start to carefully notice the thoughts between, or sorry, the gaps between your thoughts, you started thinking again. So, you know, it's kind of like the shadow that when you turn the light on, it's gone. We won't tease that apart right now, but it's sometimes awareness of your awareness is self-involved, but it doesn't have to be eventually, but sometimes it is. Or involves identification with self, I should say. But I'm sorry.
Oh, I just said thanks, everybody. That helps.
Yeah, it's good. The group thinking is a group.
Jill,
comments and class. Yes.
What were you just saying about false identification of thought?
Non-identification.
Ah. Yes, got it. Thank you.
Yeah. Not identifying.
Got it.
Yeah, I think so just to remind you, there, you know, sometimes we need to use skillful means, which we've done in other sessions of breathing. So just as the Buddha was pointing out, you know, one begins to slow the breath down as if you're coming from a run to a walk to standing still. There's a lot referenced in the suttas and in Dharma talks of how breath and mind are inextricably linked. And so we can use the skillful means of breath practices. Now, it could be, and we've done quite a few, those of you who have been with me for a while, if you haven't been with me for very long, you can go on my website and I've got lots of different ways to practice breathing and, you know, recorded on there. And certainly we will practice different kinds of breath practices together as we continue on. But it's a skillful way to slow the mind or to find those gaps between thoughts, or to set sort of what Carol was saying, to set the reset button. It's like, aha, let it go for a moment. And to do that over and over again is finding space or creating space, you know, which we've talked about. I think we talked about that last time. So there are lots of different ways that we can do it. Lots and lots and lots of skillful means or techniques. And I think the important thing to remember is that we want to do whatever it is that we're doing over and over and over again. That's the bottom line of repetition. That's the way things change. And then to remember that that repetition, whatever it is that we're doing, if we can be kind to ourselves about ourselves, then we'll be inviting change in a skillful way rather than contracting or repelling ourselves, contracting around ourselves or repelling ourselves. So it's the kind, heartful invitation that really does create a more open willingness to return or remember or be with. That's really, I think, probably the most important thing to remember. So it's repetition, but with kindness, repetition with gentility, repetition with compassion, repetition with a nice invitation. You know, that's the no thank you, not right now aspect. So it's not like get out of here, which is something that we tend to default towards, or you're never going to get this, go away, or just give up. But it's, oh, hey, hi, how are you? No, thanks. Not right now, or not anymore. I've also used that. Not anymore. But it's doing it over and over again. Don't slam the door. Open the door. Greet. It's also the Rumi poem of the guest house. You could use that. Greet, say, hey, welcome. But I'm not going to have you stay very long. You're just a guest. You're not a roommate anymore. Or something like that. Stretching out the metaphors here. So if you want to look up the sutta, let me spell this for you. if you go to, I find one of the best places to dig into the Buddha's teachings is on a website called Access to Insight. Access to Insight. And you'll find different translations of the suttas. But you can also type in a word or a phrase. You could type in body and see what comes up, for instance. But this one is the Vittakasatana, or sometimes if it's in Pali, Vittakasatana. Oops, I just screwed it up. The V is pronounced W. Vittakasatana. It's V I T A K K A S A N T H A N A. Okay, so you can read translations of what the Buddha taught. And also, Jack Kornfield wrote about it in a blog or a piece or an essay, I'm not quite sure what he's calling them, called Transforming Anxiety and Difficult Thoughts, that you can find on his website. And he brings in this sutta, or this line of working with our own thoughts and minds. So take heart. You're not alone. Might feel like it, especially now. But remember, that's just a thought. It's not true. It might feel real, but it's not true. So that's what we're all together for, is to remind each other with some kindness occasionally or regularly, whatever we have access to. So thank you very much for joining me. You can unmute who you want. Say goodbye.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you, Jill.
Thanks, Jill.
Bye, everybody.
See everyone. Have a good night.
Thanks, Jill.
Good day. Good night. Yes, wherever you are.
Good day.
Bye.
Bye-bye.